Hey everyone, this is WDET's Sam Bobian. Many have already heard, but we have just learned about the passing of the legendary Detroit musician and amazing person, Amp Fiddler. Amp was a great friend of mine and a great musical collaborator. We spent a lot of time together over the last few decades. And this is a big loss for our community and for music in general. There's a lot of people out there who make music, but there's very few people who have changed music, and Amp is one of those people. So today I wanted to share an interview I did with Amp a few years ago. We were in his basement studio where Jay Dilla learned how to make beats, where George Clinton recorded, and many others here in Detroit. Amp shares his life of music and some amazing stories that I am really happy to share with everyone today. So let's take a moment here to remember the great Amp Fiddler. Hey Amp, thanks for doing this.
It's good to be here. Thanks for coming out.
It's always really inspiring coming to your studio. It's kind of a legendary spot for us musicians here in Detroit. We know that you've had George Clinton down here. We know that Jay Dilla, you know, learned how to use the MPC drum machine down here. We know that you've recorded lots of greats, man, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Welcome.
So let's start from the beginning, man. Let's start from, you know, I've known you for a couple of years, and you've shared so many great stories with me. But I don't think we've ever talked about, you know, your beginning. So how did you start playing music? Did you your parents get you piano lessons with your when you were young or something, or how did that work?
Well, there's always a piano in my house when I was a kid, and my older siblings were studying piano before me. My mom bought a piano for my oldest sister. By the time I entered high school, no one was playing it, so my mom was pretty adamant about pushing me into, you know, studying piano, and she kept bring me places. I was like, nah, that lady is a little too old. I don't want to be bothered with that. She's too crazy. There's a lady across the street from the dentist's office. So one day I was at Grinnell Brothers on Woodward. I don't know if you've ever been there. It might have been before your time, but it was beautiful. So my buddy and I were there, and we would go there to steal effect pedals for his guitar.
You say steal?
Yes, okay. Steal.
Major heard that right.
Yeah. So I decided I'd walk in the back while he was looking to steal pedals and talk to an old lady. Because I saw her go in and I thought, damn, she must be the piano teacher, so I'm gonna go talk to her. And she had to be about 87, and that was something against what I thought would work for me. So her name was Miss Whitman, and I signed up with her. Lessons were $7.50 a half an hour. And that was really just how I got started. I was kind of hook. My mom was happy, and I made her happy, and it was like starting from the beginning, so I was always in the house practicing. I guess I was about 17, and that's kind of like when it started. I was longer than that. I must have been 16.
And were you singing before then?
I was not singing at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So eventually, you know, you started playing a lot through the city of Detroit, and you started working with different artists, and we all know the great career you had. So who was the first large act that hired you to play with them?
When I graduated from high school, one of my best friends introduced me to, well, actually he just asked me to come to the studio. He said they were auditioning keyboard players. I was like, oh man, I don't know if I could do it. You know, his brother was the singer for Enchantment. So I got the audition. And I got the job. After I played with Enchantment, I got a job with RJ's Latest Arrival. After that, I did that for about a year. And then later, I got a gig with Was Not Was. After things calmed down with touring, I started recording with the 4-track and all the keyboards that I could find, and just building a recording studio. And across the street from me were the Peppers, and they were related to Michael Clip Payne, who was a singer for George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. So I met him, I met George Clinton's sons, who would come by here all the time, and I started recording with them. I got the first gig playing with Malia Franklin, and she used to live in Highland Park. Malia Franklin was the lead singer of Parlette.
Okay, like the female Parliaments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was like the godmama. And that's where I start getting involved. My name was being mentioned more because I was playing with cats who were either in the band with George or was in conversation with George quite a bit.
So you recorded and performed with George Clinton. You told me you lived with him too, is that right?
In California. My brother got into a jam with these guys, and they were trying to shoot up the house. And the studio was upstairs before I moved downstairs. And he was in the hospital because they had shot him up. And we were here. So it was really stressful because my friends came over and we had a lot of artillery in the house. And it was just not conducive to music at all. Mm-hmm. And he was the only one that was really involved in the drugs like that, my brother. So he kind of separated himself from the house so that we wouldn't have to be involved in it. In the interim, George said, wow, he found out. He said, come with me to California because the other musicians are arguing. They're not getting along well. So we start working. He brought me to California, and I stayed there for a year with him in the hotel, Park Sunset Hotel on Sunset and La Cienega for about a year.
Wow. What was that like? We all know the crazy stories,
man,
about George.
It was amazing, man. It was so cool, man.
After you left George Clinton's band, you became a touring musician and session artist. Was this around the time that you met Brand New Heavies, Prince, and Jamiroquai?
It was definitely in the time of me touring with Parliament Funkadelic that I met. First, I met Prince in L.A. at Sheila Escobedo's birthday party. And Weekend Funk was recorded in Detroit with Bootsy and George.
Yeah, the song Weekend Funk is a song by Prince that features George Clinton, and you're listed on the track as personnel playing keyboards and some background vocals.
Chris Bruce introduced me to Seal later on after I came back home from living in California. And I went out there and I played piano for Seal on Kiss from a Rose album. When we finished, I ended up staying longer with Seal because I found out that the Brand New Heavies recording, and then I went there and recorded Brother, Sister, Brother, Sister. So, that was an amazing time. And what happened was, on the way home, I was at the airport, and I had just bought the Jamiroquai record because it was his first record. When I got to the terminal, he was there. But it was a direct flight to Detroit.
Okay, he was coming to Detroit?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I went and talked to him, and we got to be friends. And when he got to Detroit, I, you know, took him to get some weed, took him to the Motown Museum, and we to eat, and we just hung out the whole time.
Was he coming here to perform or record or just hang out or what?
Coming here to experience Detroit.
Oh, wow.
So from that point on, when he came to town, I would sit in. So I never really recorded with him, but we would all, he would always invite me to come on stage and play. And his musicians were really cool. We all became really good friends. So that's how that happened.
Around the time that you came back to Detroit, you got heavily involved with the electronic music scene. And for me personally, that was my introduction to Amp Fiddler. You were this guy who was adding these live elements and great vocal parts to these classic house and techno songs. So how did you start getting involved with the electronic music scene here in Detroit?
Eddie Folks introduced me to Carly Capp, who was an A&I guy from a label in London. And I started sending material to this guy, and we started developing a relationship. And the first single that we released was Waltz for Ghetto Fly. In the interim, he was telling me, you know, it would be cool if you collaborate with some guys there. All these house guys are there, and you need to collaborate with them. So Bub and I were doing sessions for this guy named Kenny Dixon. And we would be going by Norma Jean's house to do the sessions with Kenny. And he paid us to play on his stuff, and it was all house stuff. So in the interim, Carly Capp kept telling me that I should find this guy, Moody Man. And then one day he said, yeah, I think his name is Kenny Dixon. Do you know him, Amp? I was like, man, I've been doing sessions with this dude for weeks. He said, that's amazing. So you've got to talk to him and see about doing a collaboration. So I did, and that's how I started doing more techno stuff and more house, more soul house. And that's how I asked him to bring something for the album, and he brought Love and War. Then he did remixes for me, and we did I'm Doing Fine together. It's always fun with Kenny, you know. He's got a great ear for what he wants, and it's always fun. So he thinks like the way that I kind of think, in a way that nothing has to be perfect, it just has to be cool. And I like that, because it doesn't have to be structured in the way that it has to fit into a box, so that he just needs it to be a certain, to feel good, and then he makes it what he wants it to be afterwards. I like that.
You know, we've heard the stories about J. Dilla learning how to use the MPC drum machine down here. Was he in high school or something when you met him?
That's right. Where we're sitting now was an old rickety window that you push open to get air. And I had a banging system. It sounded good out there. It was banging. So this kid walked by and heard it and said, man, we rap. Can we come in?
Where we come from is a place we call Coney Gardens.
With six other kids. They all rap. And Dilla was the one that they said could make beats. The group was called Ghost Town, and the first track to reproduce for it was called Ghost Town to the Break of Day. Slum Village was part of Ghost Town, and it was four different acts in that one name, and it was just a conglomerate. And Dilla, he had never touched a drum machine. He had all the loops, and I told him to put them all on one cassette. So I took the loops, and we put them in the MPC. I showed him how to do it. I put them in there for him, recorded it on the 8-track, and we started recording. That was the first production.
What was he sampling for that first beat? Do you remember?
I had that song. I have to find it. I don't remember.
You still have
it? They were jazz records, you know. And I had tons of records down here, and his dad had tons of records. So his samples came from his dad's, but he was down here all the time. You know, he would come by and knock on the door if I wasn't busy, ask if he can come down. You know, I'm like, yeah, cool. And he'd knock on the door, come back up, and ask me to show him something on the MPC. I would teach him something just about every day different about it until he got it. And once he got it, he had excellent timing and excellent rhythm for it. He was really good. Dilla always said that for me to introduce him to George Clinton while we were on the tour for Lollapalooza. And so what I did was I was on tour with George, and I talked to Q-Tip one time on a tour date. And I was always taking the cassette tapes to Q-Tip and playing them Dilla, and they were always playing D'Angelo. And him and Ali Muhammad were always playing D'Angelo because Ali Muhammad was producing D'Angelo. So when we got to Detroit, I picked up Dilla and T3 and took them out there and made the introduction. And he became huge years later when Tip called him back and hired him to the UMA to become a producer. And it was an amazing chain of events.
Yeah.
He changed the face of music as it was known for hip-hop and soul music.